This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
We begin hour number two of Sharp Money here at South Point Casino and Hotel. Dave Ross and Amal Shaw coming at you. Boy, what a show we've got, and it just keeps getting bigger and bigger. We've got Steve Berline joining us now, kind enough with his time. You can follow him on Twitter, at Steve Berline. Of course, as a Dallas Cowboy fan, I think of Steve and his Cowboy days, but I know Golden Domers think of him from Notre Dame as well. Steve, great to have you on the program again. I did want to start there, if you don't mind, at Notre Dame. Now that you have Sam Hartman coming in as a transfer from Wake Forest, you know, it's weird when you see that the portal and how things work out these days. What do you make of this move for Hartman this year at Notre Dame, and what are the expectation levels like?
Well, I can honestly tell you, first off, thank you for having me on today, fellas. I appreciate it. Always enjoy getting into this kind of stuff. But I think that for the first time in a very long time, I think the Notre Dame faithful have very high expectations, and it's specifically because of Sam Hartman and what he's proven, what he's done in his career at Wake Forest. I know it's not in a he wasn't doing it in a traditional offense, but I had a chance to meet him about a month ago at a charity golf tournament back in South Bend, and he is so hungry to prove and show that he can do it. His experience, obviously, is second to none. He's a sixth-year senior. And I think that for the first time in a long time, we are really going to have what I think would be considered a chance to have elite quarterback play. And you know, it's been a very, very long time since Notre Dame has had that level of play out of the quarterback position. And I think this really might become kind of the model they go after. They did it last year with Jack, or 2 years ago with Jack Cohn, and ended up working out pretty well for them. And I think there's always going to be one of those kind of quarterbacks like Sam Hartman out there that are that fifth year, but sixth year guys are obviously are thinning out a little bit. But the fifth year guy who's already graduated, who has that extra year of eligibility left, who's going to understand the value of what that Notre Dame quarterback moniker will do for you for the rest of your life, and the attention and the profile that you get stepping into that role as a fifth-year guy. I think that that's going to be kind of the way that Notre Dame competes at the quarterback position, because, as we know, Notre Dame just will not jump into the NIL stuff at the level I think that they would need to in order to get some of the elite quarterbacks around the country. They're not going to play that game. So this kind of a model, I think, works really well for Notre Dame, and I think Sam Hartman is going to have a great year.
I couldn't agree with you more. I think the acquisition of Sam Hartman really elevates Notre Dame offensively. People don't realize, they didn't watch a lot of Wake Forest games, Dave. Mm-hmm. This kid, no disrespect to Dave Clawson and his coaching staff, he was the reason they were in the position they were in. People don't realize, I project too much to the NFL, Steve, and I just don't think people realize how good he's going to be, and I love what you spoke about him there. I want to go to a former team of yours, the Carolina Panthers. They draft number one overall, Bryce Young from Alabama. I don't know how much you got to see him play in Tuscaloosa, but if you had a little bit, what are your thoughts on him? And then you are a big guy. Bryce Young, the opposite end of the spectrum from a size perspective. Today's game is a little bit softer, no disrespect to today's players, but can he withstand the hits?
Well, in today's game, I would be an average-sized guy at best. I was 6'2", 225 when I played, and, you know, that's considered fairly small in the NFL today. But some of these guys coming out now, and Bryce Young being one of them as well, that's my biggest question mark. I mean, they say he's, what, 185 pounds, 5'10"? That's what he's kind of listed at coming out of Alabama, at least. I have really very little question about him and his ability to, you know, translate at the NFL level from a quarterback knowledge perspective and the ability to grasp concepts and read defenses. And he's done a lot of that throughout the course of his career at Alabama in a very, I think, NFL style offense. Probably more so than many colleges are doing these days. I think his experience in that system under Nick Saban and the offensive coordinators he's had there will translate very well. And I think he can make all the throws. I think he can do all the things required to be a successful quarterback at the NFL level. But I just worry about the durability thing. And I always say this about the undersized guys. I said it about Kyler Murray. The jury is still out on him, I honestly believe. And this is a huge year for Kyler Murray in Arizona. But for Bryce Young, again, it's not a question of, I think, whether he can play at the NFL level. It's whether he can do it for 17 weeks into the, you know, throughout the NFL season and still be playing at the top of his game if there happens to be an opportunity to play in the playoffs. That's going to be the biggest question. If he can stay healthy, they can find a way to keep him on the field. I think he has a chance to be a real special.
I want to go to another one of your former teams. That'd be the Dallas Cowboys. And again, for Cowboy fans, you've got a spot in our hearts forever. In 91, you step in for Troy Aikman, take the Cowboys all the way to the playoffs. The quarterback now is Dak Prescott, and he's coming off after that injury last year, missed five games. Cooper Rush came in there and did a pretty good job there. And instead, he's on record, I'm not going to throw 10 interceptions. You know the pressure of not only being a Notre Dame quarterback, but being a Dallas Cowboy quarterback. Is that wearing on Dak? And what type of year do you think Dak's going to have down this year with a star in his helmet?
Well, let me just say this initially about Dak. I like Dak Prescott, but I'm not sold on him. And I never have been. And he is Tony Romo. He is Kirk Cousins. He's a guy that can put up the big numbers. He's got a lot of talent around him. He's in a position that almost any quarterback in the NFL would kill to play in that offense with those skill position guys around him. The opportunity for success is very high, but it's not about the statistics. It's not about the numbers. And we obviously know the documented interception issues he's had the last few years, but his production offensively when he's been healthy has been with the best in the NFL. But when the game is on the line, a big game is on the line, a game that you have to win against a quality opponent, these guys just kind of disappear a little bit. And you can look at the track record through the course of Dak's career as a starting quarterback. The big games, the games that he has to show up, and they have to have him play big in order to win, he does not show up. And that is, I think, the monkey on his back. And he knows that. Believe me, they talk about it in the locker room and in the meeting rooms. And he understands that in order to get that respect and that comfort and that confidence that you're going to be the guy for a long period of time, you've got to start winning those big primetime games, especially late in the season, those games coming down the stretch in December, and give your team a chance to get in the playoffs and go deep in the playoffs. So we'll see. I mean, he's going to have a good year. I think he's going to put up big numbers. He is going to be pressing a little bit to prove, I think, everybody wrong because he knows people are talking about it. But I want to see if he can step up when they need him to step up and win the big games.
I love that breakdown. That is so honest and so accurate.
Yes.
I absolutely love it. I want to go to a team that's on the cusp of potentially getting to a Super Bowl again. That's the San Francisco 49ers. But we see Brock Purdy coming off a UCL injury. From your perspective, how good can he be despite the fact that, you know, he was Mr. Irrelevant from a draft standpoint? Not really that relevant as you get into the second season, but the talent around him is so immense. Does he just have to be like a Trent Dilfer and just manage the game?
Well, I think that he is a kid that potentially has, you know, very, very special qualities. He does remind a lot of people of Joe Montana with his overall demeanor and the way that he kind of moves. He's not a runner per se, but he's very mobile. He's very good at extending plays and throwing the ball on the run. The body of work is still, in my opinion, not enough to make a true judgment as to whether he's going to be the guy long term. And obviously the big question about the elbow. I had the exact same elbow surgery twice late in my career, so I know what he's going through, what he's been through. I think the one mistake that the Niners could possibly make, and I think they need to avoid, is trying to get him out there too early. And I can share a personal example. I had, after my last year in Carolina with the Panthers in 2000, I had to have the same surgery after that season. I got released by the Panthers because of salary cap reasons, and I was so pissed off about that, and I was about ready to retire, but Mike Shanahan offered me the opportunity to go to Denver to finish up my career, and I pushed it a little bit too hard going into training camp. I would have been ready probably for the regular season, but I wanted to show Shanahan that I could be ready for training camp, and I pushed it a little bit too hard, and I tore the elbow again. And so that's what I think the Niners have to be very careful with. They've got to try. We're talking about the same time frame, surgery right after the season was over. You've got to let that thing get to 100%. He's got to work his way up from a standpoint of the endurance and the conditioning of that elbow. And it may mean letting him sit for the first 3 or 4 weeks of the season, giving Trey Lance those games. I know they have confidence in Trey Lance as well. Let him see if he can get the team off to a good start. And then after that first quarter of the season, make the decision of who you want to go to and how you want to handle that QB situation.
Absolutely.
But I really do think that Brock Purdy, if he's healthy, has a chance to be a special quarterback. And that system, as you said, the players they've got in that depth chart, it's spectacular. I mean, that would be, I think, the number one destination for any quarterback if they had a choice.
You know the Shanahan system very, very well, Steve. Hey, we really appreciate your time today. By the way, how's the arm today? Can you get out there and still whip it in the backyard?
You know, I could still wing it. There's no doubt about it. I still have little visions that I could get out there and play in this new NFL, you know, where the quarterbacks don't get hit very much. I feel like I could get out there and throw it if I had a good solid pocket. But shoot, man, I think we all feel that way. I'll take it all the way to the grave. Reality says that's probably not the way it is, but I still think I can get it done.
Steve, great conversation. Appreciate your time. Enjoy the upcoming season. We'll have you back on very soon. All right, much more to get to. Talk some more NFL when we come back here on Sharp Money. I'm VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We all know about the speed of sound, but have you ever thought about the sounds of speeding? Because if you drive too fast, you're going to hear the sound of your vehicle crashing, and you don't want that. Because one way or another, speed will catch up with you. This is paid for by NHTSA, NHTSA. So please, everybody, Las Vegas and beyond, slow it down. Just take a load off. You're going to get to where you have to go. Just don't be in such a hurry. Well, I used to have a lead foot. Not
really?
Anymore. Yeah. I'm like such an old man driver now. I don't even want to be in the left-hand lane.
I've never been that big of a speeder.
Oh, you never were?
No.
Oh, I was like Fast and Furious.
No, if it was a long-distance trip, right, if you're going, let's say, because we have a lot of people that are truckers that listen to us and things, if they're going, let's say you're going Salt Lake City to Los Angeles on Interstate 15, if you're going maybe 75 instead of 70, you're going to make up some time, right? In essence, you're getting 5 miles more per hour. But if you're in a short duration, it's just the risk isn't worth the reward.
I would try to set records, like in personal records. I did Miami to D.C. I think I did that in 18 straight hours. It was crazy.
That's like slow. It's actually not, because I made it from Miami to New York in 22, so that's about the same.
Yeah. But I do not advise that, people. We're saying the opposite. Slow it down.
But that's not speeding. That's just endurance more.
Trying to get there.
Yeah, but my favorite is when someone flies by me, and then we end up going to the same place, and we end up at the place at the same time.
Because you have to look at
it. I'm like, you botched it, bro. You were stressing to get around me and freaking out because I wasn't moving fast enough. And look, we're parking in the same lot at the same time.
Do you make eye contact?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You got to let them know.
I smile.
You can't do it anymore, but I used to like to wave to them. Like, hey, I'm here too. You know, and they're passing you. You know, it's funny. When you go to Los Angeles from Vegas or vice versa, I set the cruise. The speed limit's like 75, so I'll set it at like 77, 78. Dude, everybody's passing me like I'm walking.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, like, I'm like the slowest guy, and I'm on the right-hand lane, but I'm like, man, I'm like,
right-hand lane, go as slow as you want.
Yeah. But I have a bad thing that I do on the highway. If I see someone really, like, driving
recklessly,
yeah. I do like to try and box them in if I can. And see them freak out and bounce back and forth. I mean, you shouldn't do it. It's a bad, I'm not saying, but sometimes, like, you know what, man? I need you to be aware that you're acting like a you-know-what bag, and I'm going to slow you down here.
But to your point, and I know we're going to go to Joe Burrow here in a second, when you get above 75 to 80-plus miles an hour, the speed at which you're traveling, the danger, and think about this, a lot of the places we're talking about are in the western part of the United States.
Yeah.
So if something unfortunately were to happen, the nearest emergency services are pretty far away. So I just slow
it down.
I'd rather arrive alive.
Yeah. Again, what we used to do, we're telling you not to do. These stories are from the past.
No, I've never.
Well, you
really
never
been,
were.
Yeah,
me and Dustin were.
Speeder,
yeah. Yeah, we were. Let's get back to that Joe Burrow story because it has been updated since the top of the show. So we all saw the calf injury. And now Zach Taylor has come out and said, Dr. Taylor, that Joe is going to miss several weeks. Now, you and I were talking about this during the break. I was there in Washington, D.C. the year after RG3 blew up his knee. And the next year in Richmond, Virginia, where training camp was, Robert would come out and, you know, no pads.
Yep.
And the crowds are there to see him. When people go to Bengals camp, no disrespect, they're not going to watch the defense. They want to see Joey B. So they're going to trot him out there, and he's going to be in no pads, and he's going to jog. So it looks good. I called it the dog and pony show. And that's what RG3 did that back in the day. But I remember those days so well because I went, he's not playing this preseason. I would be stunned if he's out for multiple weeks, to Zach Taylor's point, that you wouldn't have seen him anyway in the preseason more than likely. Than maybe a, but now, and this will get into your preseason handicaps eventually if you're into that for the NFL, I don't expect to see Joe Burrow until week one of the NFL season.
I would agree with you. Remember, he missed six games at the end of his rookie year with the torn ACL. Played 16 games last year, or 20, played 16 games. The Bengals played 17 and 21, and last year he played all 16 games. This guy's been durable. He's been healthy. This is Super Bowl or bust for the Cincinnati Bengals team. I think there are probably six teams, and included you throw in the Jets, throw in the Dolphins if you want. There's other teams that have that same mindset, but this is a legitimate 1, 2, or 3 in your power rankings of who can win a Super Bowl.
I'll tell you this too. Last year, he had an appendix situation, if we remember, before the start of the year, right? And so he didn't play at all. Almost 365, we go back to this same type thing. He was awful in week one in a loss to the Steelers.
4 picks, I think.
I think I had 12. It felt like every pass was a pick, right? So you mentioned the Browns game off the top of them all. Doesn't it have a similar feel that, like, he's going to miss? Look, everybody's going to go, nobody's going to overreact to the fact that he's not going to play in the preseason, but he's not going to be really training at training camp is the bigger issue to me, right? So I would think that game one feels trappy at Cleveland. And as you mentioned, the Browns play him when he's healthy. The Browns play the Bengals well, traditionally.
Well, I tell you what, the loss of Joe Burrow, they said several weeks, which could mean anywhere theoretically from what, 3 to 6 weeks. It's very important that they have him in the lineup for the first 2 weeks of the season because you're at the Browns, you have the Ravens at home. Those are two division games. Mm-hmm. If they get off to a similar hiccup like they did last year, it could be a bit of a problem because I think the Ravens are going to be better this year, and I think the Browns are going to be appreciably better. So this is not going to be an easy division. You know, I could make the argument, actually, this is the best division in football.
Oh, top to bottom.
Yes. Pittsburgh, they're always right there at 500 at the worst, right? They're usually in contention. I like Kenny Pickett more than other people do. We talked about the Ravens. Every team in this division has a quarterback that they are looking at as their franchise quarterback. I think it's very competitive. I get the AFC East with Buffalo, the Jets, Miami, New England. To me, are the Steelers much worse than New England? I don't think so. I can make the argument that the Browns are right there with one of the, either if you want to put the Dolphins back there or whomever else. Cincinnati, in my opinion, is better than all those teams in that division.
I look at this too. That number right now, Cleveland week one at Cincinnati at Cleveland.
+3?
-2 for the Bengals.
Oh, it's come down. Maybe it's come down.
So come down a little bit. That's a subtle move here with this Joe Burrow news. You live in Cincinnati. You don't live in Cleveland. Sam Weish.
Yep.
But like, I look at that and I go, that is a slight move here in the market. Still 47.5, pretty high total, which, by the way, if Joe Burrow is compromised or does not play, there's no way you're going to get me to over money on that total at 47.5. So you and I used to talk about this a lot last year. When I look at a number like that, I'd be more apt, if I'm on the Cleveland side, to just play a +$1.10 for the Browns on the money line instead of taking the two. Not many times do the games fall 1 or 2.
Correct.
But with that subtle adjustment, that says to me, not that history is going to repeat, but last year the Bengals started off 0-2. They lost week one to Pittsburgh, and then they lost to the great Cooper Rush against the Dallas Cowboys, which kind of resurrected the Cowboys season when it looked dead when Super Dak Prescott got injured in week one. So I just kind of feel like history is repeating a little bit here with a preseason injury, the appendix last year, and now here with the calf to Joe Burrow. And I just wonder if they're going to get off to another slow start, as you mentioned. But now two divisional games with the Browns in week one and then week two against the Ravens. This gets to be a really tough spot if Joe Burrow is not 100% and they're asking him to play, which we don't know at this juncture.
You're absolutely right. And Joe Burrow, in his 3 years in Cincinnati, the team is 1-5 versus the Browns during that stretch. And this is going to be a crucial game from a division standpoint to see where this, where this Browns team is. And they get that game at home. You know, I mentioned the line at, I said +3, you said -2. I mean that I thought the Bengals were a 3-point favorite. So if you're looking at betting this from a Browns standpoint, I wouldn't bet it yet, because you'd rather see it come up to 3. That's in your favor and your benefit. If you do like the Bengals and you expect Burrow to be healthy enough and ready to go, I think it's a great opportunity to take Cincinnati, because if he does end up playing, I think the number will bounce back to 3.
One other game that I have earmarked, and we just talked about it with Steve Berline, great conversation with Steve, by the way, from CBS Sports, is the Brock Purdy situation in San Francisco. And they're on the road in week one against Pittsburgh. And I believe right now they're 3-point favorites on the ROAD here. And we don't know, again, what Brock Purdy's going to look like. But, Dustin, I believe we've got some sound. Let's hear from Brock in his recovery.
I feel like I'm good enough to play an 11-on-11 football. And so we talked about that when I got back here with Shanahan. And basically I told him, I'm like, hey, I feel good enough and confident enough that if I got into an 11-on-11 situation, I can make every throw. And so that's the conversation that we had. And they gave me the green light to go out there and go. And obviously the medical staff told them, and they've been with me this whole time throwing in the off season. They gave Shanahan the green light to, hey, he's good enough to do it. And they've seen me throw. So we've all been on the same page the whole time. But yeah, I feel good enough to play football right now at camp, 11-on-11. Still got to work up volume and just continue to get better every day.
I think the 49ers are in a hugely advantageous position, and people won't think about it from this perspective. His injury, they could beat Pittsburgh without him in the lineup. Doesn't matter. But Trey Lance, remember, what was he, the second or the third pick? I think it was the third pick.
Third,
right? Because Mitch Trubisky went second. Right.
Yeah.
So he was the third pick, I believe. But the point is that Lance is in a situation where there's a huge upside with him still, right? We've written him off after 2 years, but he's still the third overall pick. There's some talent there. Imagine if Trey Lance plays and he's better than advertised, and some of the early reports from the teammates in San Francisco look good for the 49ers. Mm. But to me, don't discount this team, even if Purdy's not in the lineup. They've got that 1-2 punch of running the football, and Elijah Mitchell's going to be back healthy. Add him into the mix as well. San Francisco's, I'm telling you, man, this team's going to be a force.
By the way, when we come back, we're going to get back to boxing and more boxing royalty. Jerry Cooney on the program next here on Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Download the DraftKings app today. New customers can bet just $5, get $150 in bonus money instantly by using the promo code VSIN, that's VSIN, when you sign up today. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for all the terms and conditions. You know, I feel like, Amal, that when I do shows with you now, I should introduce you as boxing royalty, because you're calling one hell of a fight tomorrow night that we can't wait to watch. Al Spence Jr. against Terrence Bud Crawford. We're going to, as they say in the business, we're efforting Jerry Cooney. So hopefully we'll get the great Jerry Cooney to join us. You know, you look back at Jerry Cooney, for people that might not remember, mm-hmm. you know, he only beat, you know, he was in there with guys like Larry Holmes for the heavyweight championship of the world. Mike Tyson fought Tyson back in Tyson's prime. Michael Spinks, one of the fighters I grew up watching as an Olympic guy. And then you go, like, he fought the very best there was to fight. And Amal, you're going to be watching one of the best fights, possibly. You could be breaking on a historical fight tomorrow night right here in Las Vegas.
Yeah, I'll be on the pre-fight coverage. And I'll tell you what, Dave, we talked about it with Jim Lampley. This mm-hmm. is an incredible fight. It's one where you got both fighters in their primes, Bud Crawford at 35, Spence at 33 years old. Both of these guys have been tremendous in the welterweight division at 147 pounds and what they've been able to accomplish. Bud comes in at 39 wins, I think 30 by KO or around 28, somewhere in that range. And you look at Spence, similar numbers as well. He has been outstanding, 28 wins, just been dominant. And neither of these guys has really been challenged. So where the interesting thing comes in this fight is which guy can deal with the adversity of being facing off against a fighter that's capable of putting either one on the canvas. And Dave, I'll tell you another thing. It was funny. I was talking to our boss, John Goulet, about this. He bet Crawford, and he goes, what do you think? I said, I don't know. I think this match is a complete toss-up. And so just from that perspective, I can make an argument to take Spence because he is the underdog. But I think both these guys are tremendous fighters. If you haven't seen them fight, you'll love it. They are just the best of the best within that welterweight division. Ugas is probably the third-ranked welterweight, but I think there's a step down from him compared to what we see out of Crawford and Spence.
I like the Crawford side minus $1.50.
You do?
But
okay.
The total is what really has intrigued me looking at this fight. And again, you can get over $2 in the betting market if you think it's going to go over 10.5 rounds right now. And I get, you know, in a great conversation. Please go back if you missed it in the first hour with Jim Lampley, who's seen everything there is to see in the fight game. And I kind of look at it and I go, there feels like there's finishing potential. Errol Spence Jr. is going to come at you, right? And again, we had Showtime, Sean Porter, Sean King and I had Showtime in studio this past week. And I asked him, I said, what's the thing about each fighter? Because he fought both of them. Yeah. And he lost a close split decision loss to Errol Spence. And his last fight as a professional, he lost to Bud Crawford. And he said the thing about Bud is his timing. His timing is impeccable. So the thing about Errol Spence, Showtime Sean Porter said, is he's always going to constantly come forward.
Yeah.
So you've got a guy with great timing versus a guy that's going to be there to be hit because he's coming at you. So if you get that timing right, I think you could get maybe a Crawford finish. And or if Spence can impose his will, possibly he could be able to surprise people and get Crawford out of there earlier rather than later.
Look, I think the fight's going to be fantastic. You know, from a betting standpoint, it's going to be a high price, but I would look at this one going potentially the distance. I think that right now the over-under set at 10.5. Dave, I think they're just too good of fighters to be in a situation where one of them's going to go down. There's the big plus money price on either one of them getting knocked down. The other thing I would point to is when you're this good of a fighter, I think so many times we get enamored by the KOs and how quickly they take care of guys, but you're a defensive fighter as well. You're not going to sit there. Otherwise, you're going to get put down yourself if you don't defend extremely well. And I think both these guys are capable of doing that. And it's going to be interesting. We talked about it with Jim Lampley, and I love what he said about Terrence Crawford, his ability to adjust. That's such an important thing in any sport, not just boxing, but in any sport. If you're playing a defense, what do you do after that first series if you go 3 and out? You know, all those things are a factor. So it should be a ton of fun. I think it's going to be really one of the best fights in a long time. And, you know, you talked about pound for pound, and I think the winner of this fight will get that basically, what do you want to call it, an imaginary crown?
Mythical title.
Yeah, sure. Of best pound for pound. But I'm going to tell you, in my opinion right now, who the best fighter in boxing is. David Benavidez.
Really?
This guy, I was fortunate enough to sit ringside for his fight against Caleb Plant. And a friend of mine who's in boxing, he said to me, he goes, I'm going to tell you right now, his corner did him a disservice. They should have thrown in the towel.
Wow.
He goes, he was getting pummeled. And these guys are fantastic. And Spence really can move up to 154. But when you look at Bud Crawford, this is really an opportunity. What's great for both of these guys, they have contemporaries who are on their level.
Well, when you mentioned that, and you mentioned Spence being able to go up and wait, that does take me back to Pretty Boy Floyd, who became Money Mayweather, and Floyd at 147, right? Floyd did go up for those boxing aficionados, went up to 54 and beat Oscar De La Hoya back in 2007 in a split decision, very close fight. But he did some unthinkable things in weight classes here. Mm-hmm. These guys at 147, can we put them in the Floyd Money Mayweather category? Because to me, whatever you think about Floyd Mayweather, inside the ring, that squared circle, he's the best I've ever seen.
I will say he's the best defensive fighter I've ever seen.
I mean, he doesn't get hit.
Well, his ability to roll his shoulders and to avoid punches is spectacular. And you sit there and say, well, you know, it's almost like when we take a great defense in the NFL, like the 2000 Ravens, and they would just win games with their defense. That's kind of how I equate Floyd to being. You know, Sugar Ray Robinson would be an all-timer. Obviously, didn't see him, but you know, there are some great fighters in that
class.
But
we can put the winner possibly in that conversation?
In a top 10 for sure, in my opinion. I mean, these guys have been so dominant when you look at it. Errol Spence, 28 wins, 22 by KO. I mean, that is incredibly impressive what he's been able to do. Bud Crawford, 39 wins, I think 30 by KO. They are dominant. And you've got guys, maybe because boxing isn't as popular as it was in the 80s and the 90s, when you had Thomas Hitman Hearns and Sugar Ray Leonard.
Those middleweights.
Yeah, absolutely. But to me, when you look at some of these guys at these weights, it's really unbelievable.
Well, to get that kind of knockout power at 47, maybe the one, if you want to have a flaw for an undefeated fighter like Floyd Money Mayweather, you could say he didn't have the punching power that these guys have.
Yeah.
That the KO percentages that these guys have. So I think that's a counter argument if we're looking now in that mythical GOAT conversation at 147. But I do think the winner could take a big step up if it's spectacular. If there's a stoppage here. Because, you know, I go back again to when Floyd fought Manny. They felt like they were both a little bit past their primes.
I completely agree.
When Ali fought Frazier the first time, those guys were like these guys are now. They were both undefeated for that fight of the century at Madison Square Garden, right? And we saw Frazier win that first fight against Ali. And as Lampley said earlier in the broadcast, maybe the winner here, it does set up a second fight and potentially a trilogy like we saw with Ali Frazier. I wonder if we are embarking on the beginning of something that we haven't seen maybe since those three legendary fights between the two best heavyweights back in the day in Ali and Frazier.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's a possibility depending on how the fight goes, but just have a sense or a feeling that this one could go to the scorecard. And I'll tell you one thing that I like. It's hard for me to sit there and say one way or the other. To me, and this is the indictment, you and I have talked about this a lot off air about boxing. When you look at Saul Canelo Alvarez taking on a Triple G, I love Gennady Golovkin. I think he's a tremendous fighter. But the decision went against him in the first fight, and I thought it was a bad decision. I thought Triple G won the fight. And here, you don't have a – I always used to say when you fought Floyd, you were never going to win on the scorecard. If you look at Floyd, his 7 of his last 10 fights went to a decision. He's always going to get the decision. You had to knock him out if you could. And in this one, I don't think there's a favorite. I think, you know, Crawford's got his following from Nebraska that's loyal. Mm-hmm. Spence is from Dallas. He's got a tremendous following as well. But to me, I think the fan bases are split in terms of who they personally favor. I don't think there's any disdain for either fighter. That's what makes it really intriguing. I think with Floyd, I think a lot of people Floyd, but there's people that can't stand him. And you don't have that with either of these guys.
And that's a fascinating way to look at this. What you're saying, if I'm picking up what you're putting down, this fight goes to the cards. There's not going to be an inherent bias by a
Correct.
Fan base.
Yes.
And sometimes judges are affected. Certainly in the UFC, I see it all the time, where if you have fighters that are popular fighters and that crowd's behind them, you think you might get a split crowd here tomorrow night in Las Vegas?
I think so. It'll be interesting. The floor seats, I was told, were between 3,500 and 5,000.
Wow.
And they're completely sold out. This is the highest, I think, what I've seen on pay-per-view, if I can recall, in a while price. But the fight, it just goes to show you the excitement and the anticipation. Look, when you saw the Tank Davis and Ryan Garcia fight, Ryan Garcia is a good fighter, but he's not an elite fighter. And it was a little bit more. He's got, I think, 9-10 million followers on Instagram. These are two elite fighters. There's not another fighter right now out there. You sit there and go, okay, you're going to fight Spence, you're going to fight Crawford at 147. That can compete with these guys and take them out. You would bet those two guys every day of the week and twice on Sundays against anybody at the 147 division. Now you get two guys, and look at the pricing, Dave. You don't see minus 150 in these fights, plus 120 coming back on Spence. I mean, this is going to be a tremendous fight. I expect it to be as good as anticipation is for this one. And generally speaking, one thing I like in boxing many, many times, it lives up to the hype.
You know, and it's fascinating, too, and something Jim Lampley pointed out, that Errol Spence Jr. was kind of a prodigy. We all knew of him. Bud Crawford really wasn't that guy. That's not the way we looked at Terrence at the beginning of his career, which is similar to what we saw with Manny Pacquiao. We didn't know Manny was going to be the star, but Floyd Mayweather, we knew early on, prodigy, this is supposed to be the next. Very, very interesting fight. We'll talk more about it, certainly, Amal, before we get out of here on this edition of Sharp Money. Much more NFL as well to get to. We're going to have Mike Samas join us in hour number 3 as well. So don't go anywhere. Come on back. It's Sharp Money on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw. VSiN, the sports betting network.
The NFL betting guide is already out, and our college football guide drops next week. So get previews, predictions for every D1 team and conference, best bets on futures and season win totals, plus an in-depth breakdown of how you can use our betting splits and power rankings to be a much smarter better this football season. So sign up before the end of July, receive both guides and full VSiN Pro access all the way through the Super Bowl at an early bird discount of just $175, or sign up on a monthly subscription. Get your first 30 days for only $19 to see everything VSiN has to help up your betting game. Remember, this offer does end July 31st. Don't miss out on these preseason deals. Go to VSiN.com/subscribe. Take advantage of these special offers and become part of the Sports Betting Network. Back alongside Amal Shah, Dave Ross here. Speaking of college football.
Yeah.
Dustin, I do believe you've been releasing some of your Heisman long shots so far here on Sharp Money. And I wonder, Amal, when you look at some of these Heisman long shots that Dustin has, before we get to the rest of his list, what have I missed? Is there a name on that board that you go, yeah, I'm picking up what Dustin's putting down here?
Well, I think the biggest thing you missed is that Amal and I actually agree on like 90% of the list so far.
Really?
I actually agree with how far did
all
we get?
One.
What was the last name you got?
You didn't like Tyler Buckner. And yeah, we did Van Dyke. Van Dyke's where we left
okay,
off
yeah,
at five.
I mean,
the criteria is 25 to 1 or higher.
Yeah, I don't love Van Dyke because I don't think Miami's that good, but I think if Van Dyke were on another team, I would agree with Dustin. I think he's a good quarterback.
I would say this, because they're going to throw it more and they brought in offensive coordinator and Shannon Dawson who runs that air raid offense. Mm-hmm. If they're losing, he could put up even bigger numbers.
I would tell you this, though. There seems to be a bias against certain teams. Miami's got, what, one Heisman Trophy winner? Geno Toretta?
My guy.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's it? Just Geno?
And by the way, he, like, definitely not the best player on that team either. He was the quarterback on that team.
And they got smoked by Alabama, right? And
in the game against
the national championship.
1990.
Won the title the year before.
Yeah. That's your best the quarterback? Who wasn't the best quarterback? Jim Kelly. I think make that argument.
In college?
At Miami?
No. Bernie.
Bernie better than Jim Kelly, all-time Hurricane?
Bernie won a national title as a freshman with Howard Schnellenberger.
I mean, my guy was Ken Dorsey.
I was good. Ken Dorsey lost two games. People don't realize.
He was great.
And he was the offensive coordinator.
He lost two games by a combined 10 points, and I can make the argument, and if, you know, look, as a Buckeye, I always say Gamble was in bounds on that third down and 10 play with 2 minutes to go, but since that wasn't called in bounds, I thought it was an absolutely horrific penalty call in the end of overtime that saved the Buckeyes.
I just look, when I look at Tyler Van Dyke at 100-1, I just go, Mario Cristobal, you got to be better.
Well, no, he needs to not be involved.
Okay.
That's what it is.
Keep him out.
You're there to recruit and be a CEO. Stay out of the offensive meeting room unless you're coaching the offensive linemen.
And I agree with you guys historically that Bernie Kosar might be the best out, but I think Jim Kelly proved to be the best quarterback to ever play at Miami.
And I guess the point for Van Dyke also is, 2 years ago, he's projected to be a first-round pick, potentially like in the 15s or 20s. Like, people saw him that way and was the complete opposite a year ago. If he is anything we projected him to be a couple years ago, 100-1 is intriguing at the very least.
All right, so which reveal, Dustin, have you not revealed yet that you're going to do right now?
So we haven't done the top four.
Okay.
The one that Amal really hated was Tyler Buckner.
And
honest, I don't really love it either, but it's a principal bet because the next two are correlated to it.
Okay.
Right now there's a quarterback battle going on in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. It's Tyler Buckner, the transfer from Notre Dame. It is Ty Simpson, the five-star out of Martin, Tennessee, or four-star out of Martin, Tennessee, and Jalen Milroe, who we saw in spurts last year, use his legs and throw it a little bit for the Crimson Tide. My point is, Alabama keeps winning a lot of Heisman trophies, and you have to assume they're going to contend for a national title as well based on what is on that roster. And if they do so, whoever is the quarterback, if that person plays the entire year at that position for this team, will be in the mix for the Heisman Trophy. And if you can bet all three of them at 80, 70, and 50-1, you can find a way to get an ROI on that. In fact, Amal and I were on the phone probably 3 weeks ago, and I said, Amal, Jalen Milroe is 100-1 to win the Heisman. Why am I not betting this right now? He was like, honestly, you probably should. Before we hung up the phone, I placed the bet. He's down to 50-1 in some books. So that leads me to believe some people think that Jalen Milroe could end up being the starter.
Well, he's incredibly talented, great runner. He's got to work a little bit on his accuracy. If he can do that, they've got a pretty good receivers on the perimeter, including Burton. He should have a big year if they can get him the ball consistently. The thing is with these, you'd sit there and say, why are you betting all these? Look, he's taking a look at long shots. Ty Simpson, 70-1. He could be the starter, or if you have an injury situation there. And remember, with Alabama, four Heisman trophies going back to 2009. Mark Ingram, Derrick Henry, Devontae Smith, and Bryce Young.
Now, do you think King Saban is just going to play the best guy, or is there now, well, Milroe's been there. You know, he came in last year when Bryce Young got hurt. Does he play that game, or is it strictly going to be St. Nick says, this is going to give me the best chance to usurp Georgia this year?
Whoever can help him get back to the SEC, win the conference title, win a national title. That's who he's going to play.
So he's not going to play favorites to the guys that have been there.
No, that's the one thing with Nick Saban. You know, you play the best talent. And I think that's why when you look at Miami, when they were successful under Jimmy Johnson and Dennis Erickson, mm-hmm. they just played the best guys regardless of year. And I think that's what programs that are elite do.
Yeah. All right, let's keep going down your list here because I like the way you've kind of looked at all those Alabama options. Can find ROI, and certainly you get the better of the number there, Dustin, at 100-1 on Milroe. What about the Ohio State University this year and what they're going to look like at the QB position?
Look, Kyle McCord, I think they're technically in a battle still in Columbus, Amal, but yeah. It's Kyle McCord's going to be the dude, right?
In all likelihood, Devin Brown, the backup out of Utah. McCord's from Philadelphia, played high school ball with Marvin Harrison at St. Joe's in Philly. He's got a good arm. Brown's a better runner, but to me, McCord is the guy. And I'll tell you, this is arguably – probably see Blake Corum is going to get slighted because he's a running back.
Yep.
But to me, Corum and McCord are probably, and Sam Hartman are the three best bets on his list.
If you treat it like an MVP versus a Heisman, that's where Corum, I think, has a little more validity, but the gaudy numbers won't be there. However, I do think McCord here at number two on my top 10 Heisman long shots is interesting just because of the weapons. I don't know if there is another quarterback in the country other than maybe Carson Beck's walking into at Georgia.
Yeah.
That's going to have the plethora of weapons to throw to that can make plays after the catch. But here's where I'd give the edge to McCord. Beck's not eligible for this list because he's under 25-1, so he's not a long shot. But here's where I'd give the McCord an edge here is all Ryan Day has done since he's been at Ohio State when he was coordinator, when now is the head coach.
Mm-hmm.
These quarterbacks do nothing but produce.
They go in the first round.
Yeah. So stop thinking about Ohio State quarterbacks and what they don't do in the NFL. And think about why they're getting drafted in the first round.
Well, the funny thing is, it's such a bad narrative because Ohio State's, you got to go back to 79 and Arch Sleaster before Dwayne Haskins was drafted in the first round. So they just never had quarterback play. And to his point, when you look at it, I don't like the receiving core at Georgia as much as some other people do. Look, Ladd McConkey is tremendous, but he's like a slot receiver. He's a solid guy in the NFL. But to me, at Ohio State, you got two first round picks, not to mention future first round picks behind him. Marvin Harrison's got an opportunity to be a top three pick. Emeka Egbuka is going to be a first round pick. These are absolute dudes.
And Josh Fleming's not bad. You have a legit tight end, Cade Stover. Like, well, these are legit players.
To your point, Julian Fleming, when he came out of Pennsylvania, was the number one recruit, not in a wide receiver, the number one overall recruit in high school football. He's had injuries at Ohio State. They've got a big-time guy in Carnell Tate and Brandon Innes behind him. So they've got players. That's not a question, but I think this is a great bet.
All right, but you're number one on the board.
This is a mistake. It should have been flipped.
Wow.
So the reason is, it's just because you have to shop around. I didn't put a book on this for a reason. I had to find some of these numbers to get them in here. I found a book. You got to go figure it out on your own that has Drake May at 25-1.
Whew.
This guy accumulated 45 total touchdowns a year ago. And here's the thing. Mac Brown wants him to get noticed.
Yeah.
Wants him to be ready for the NFL. May that hurt him? In this season, putting up stats, will it help him? All I know is they added to the staff there for the Tar Heels, Chip Lindsey, Freddie Kitchens, and Clyde Christensen. All three with NFL experience. All three know how to get quarterbacks to play in the NFL. I think there is a very good chance Drake May, who can run the ball, can throw the ball, and is Mr. Everything for this UNC offense, I think he has a very good shot to have those absolutely insane statistics that will have him invited to the Heisman ceremony. And it's a big thing that I like to talk about with my futures bets. You're not placing a future because it's deadlock going to win. You're placing a future because there's a chance if it comes down to late in the season, you can find a way to make money on this ticket. That's the key.
Excellent distinction how you broke that down in terms of when you make all these bets. These are a bunch of long shots. I'll tell you why I'd have it flip. Drake May is the best quarterback on this list. There's no question about it at 25-1. But here's the problem. He loses Caleb Downs, who was Micah Downs. Caleb's his brother at
Josh
Alabama.
Downs.
Or Josh Downs, sorry. Josh Downs, who is a tremendous receiver. He doesn't have necessarily that same talent come back. J.J. Jones is back, but still, I don't think this team overall is good enough. They're going to end up with four losses. The last Heisman Trophy winner, not including the postseason, you got Robert Griffin lost three games and Tim Tebow lost three games. Florida ended up losing their fourth game against Michigan in the Capital One Bowl. But to me, McCord, Milroe, Blake Corum, Cam Rising, Sam Hartman. These guys are all going to play on teams that probably have three losses or less.
And me and Amal agreeing on like 7 of 11 is a very rare thing on this show.
Oh, I thought your list is spectacular minus Buckner. I think everybody else is justified.
And I think you guys have narrowed it where you can say, hey, these numbers, it's not necessarily that obviously the only one can win, but you can find ways to make money on that and maybe hedge off some situations later on. All right, let's talk some baseball with Jim Duquette next here.